Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm starting to feel a little bit like a normal person.
Normal human being.
I had an evening last night that I didn't actually have to be anywhere. It's like the first in 2 weeks.
Are you having withdrawals?
No. Having
busy withdrawal?
Kind of brain meltdown.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. Congratulations on a very successful installation.
Yes. Well, installations are a whole different ballgame. Mm-hmm. And it was very exhausting getting it all set up at the art gallery. And now we're in sort of a preview week.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to the opening on July 11th.
That's right. And we speak, of course, of
Janet Cardiff and George Burrs Miller, our wonderful installation of Experiment in F sharp minor and the Muriel Lake incident.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing stuff.
It certainly is. So we've had some really great responses so far.
Really?
It's been really nice. Yes, we had two full open days.
Yes.
Saturday was a fun day because we just had all ages of people in. And then yesterday we had a tour of some of our community members and then an open day, which was very interesting. People just random driving through the city, people and
stopping by.
So surprised to come in just to see some local art, and they're like, what? Janet,
this is your idea of them?
Yeah.
They're local? I know, it's really impressive. Well, I was on Twitter this morning looking up Cardiff and Miller, and there's all kinds of tweets about their other installation on the other side of the pond.
In London.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm like, huh.
Well, it opened yesterday. Yeah. They're because it's part of, is that Documenta 13? Is that what that one is?
I'm not sure about it.
Anyway,
people are raving about it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, it's because...
It was all I could do not to retweet. We've got them here, too.
Yeah. You should have. Well, and from what I understand, there's 8 sound artists in this big exhibition
show,
there.
Collective show.
And they're the ones that kind of went totally above and beyond and did this huge installation, like, rather than just, you know, smaller sound effects. Yeah, so that doesn't surprise me at all that they'd be the stars of that show.
Yeah, no, certainly. According to Twitter, they are.
Yeah.
Well, they're the stars of our show. In fact, we decided to have a whole show about installation art because it's a art form in and of itself.
It is. And it's not, it doesn't have a long, sordid history either.
No.
It's fairly new. It was sort of born out of the avant-garde contemporary art world in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
And isn't that interesting? Because we often talk about what's the next new thing going to be? And this is kind of it, isn't it?
Well, this is.
It's like crossing the line between showing and participating.
And that's, artists do that, right? Mm-hmm. We always try to find new ways of communicating, telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fairly new way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually,
like new, like 60s?
Yeah.
70s?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's about the time. Like, you can even imagine the early assemblage artists kind of starting that.
Yeah, an assemblagist is a kind of artist, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. And they're, you know, putting together real world objects and creating spaces. But installation was very much more about the architectural space it inhabited.
Okay.
So there's, if you want, I can tell you the differences here.
Please do.
Because some people do ask, well, what's the difference between sculpture and installation?
Yeah, because I think of installation and I think of that week in between shows where you install it.
Yes.
That's what installation meant to me until I now experienced the experiment in F sharp minor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I get it.
Oh. Okay, well, in case
I get it.
In case you're wondering what the difference is between traditional sculpture and installation, basically you're inverting the principles of sculpture.
Okay.
So in sculpture, you are viewing it from the outside.
Okay.
You are viewing a containment of forms and ideas and you know, materials.
Okay.
But in a installation...
I'm thinking in my head. Got my eyes closed.
Yeah, you're visualizing, right?
Okay.
In an installation, you are enveloped by the piece.
Okay.
So instead of being a spectator on the outside of the piece, you are inside a controlled environment. And that controlled environment can include everything from smells and sound and light and projected images and sculpture and everyday objects and a closed in space or an open space, right? So the architectural situation is a critical part of the installation, and you are in it.
So like those... Nuit Blanche, all that.
Yeah, some of those are installations.
Are powered by the people who come to them, or
yeah. So, oh yeah, okay. When you're enveloped by it and it becomes part of what you are doing, like it responds to what you are doing, mm-hmm. that is installation
that
art.
That is installation art.
Whereas if you're on the outside of it, if you're watching something that the artist has produced and you're just watching it be produced,
yes,
that's sculpture. Or assemblage, or, you know, there's all environmental art. There's all kinds of other kinds, but in installation, you are enveloped by the space.
Okay.
And often the artist takes into consideration the architecture, the city that you're in, the environment, like the, you know, climate.
And design, you know, you don't design a chair without knowing the room, or the room without knowing that. That's a design principle too.
Right.
It's context.
Yeah, it is. Yes. It's really, mm-hmm. it's like the ultimate context mm-hmm. art mm-hmm. is what you're doing.
So Experiment in F sharp minor, in my mind, is clearly a piece of installation art.
Yes.
Muriel Lake Incident is
it's a
piece of installation art?
Well,
question mark?
I know, actually you're right.
Maybe
let's talk about that.
Is it interactive? Well, you have to listen.
Yeah. I guess you do sort of get immersed, because the window that you look in, if you're right up to the window, mm-hmm. you feel like you're in a movie theater.
Yes.
So, and then some of the things that are happening, you've got headphones on, so you're part of the piece.
Oh,
right?
I
see.
The
piece is catching you. You're responding to the piece. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess it's almost installation.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say, let's go for that.
Yes. Okay. All right. But you can see how this would.
Yes.
Right? Whereas, so Banksy, who's a graphic activist, I would call mm-hmm. him. That's not installation art. That's environmental art.
Yeah. Or public art.
Who's to say? He could probably do installation art.
Yeah.
Okay. And the guy, what is it, Christos, who wrapped Central Park
in fabric, bright orange fabric.
Orange fabric.
That would be environmental art.
Environmental art.
Yeah. Because you're changing the environment. You're doing something to the environment to make it not what you expect.
Okay.
And you're communicating a story about the environment.
Right.
But it's not something, it's not a story that you've walked into and are immersed in.
Right.
Okay, here's something that'll really help you.
Okay.
In the very beginnings,
yes.
in the 50s,
yes.
if you can believe it, there was somebody who was kind of at the beginning of all this.
At the forefront. Of installation.
Somebody you wouldn't have expected to be at the forefront of this kind of thing. And I don't know if he inadvertently invented this, but...
Just kind of stumbled into it.
Well... Yeah, and maybe just only in hindsight do we say, oh yeah, look who was the first to kind of do this.
Yeah, okay.
So Walt Disney.
Yeah.
He and his Imagineers.
It's pretty wild.
I know.
Not his Mouseketeers, his Imagineers.
His Imagineers.
It's
his designers.
A job, you can have it.
Yeah.
Disney World.
So he asked his designers, his Imagineers, to create immersive environments
yes.
for Disneyland in the 50s.
Hmm.
And so what they were aiming for is, you know, in the museums when they try to create a natural habitat for the artificial animals that they have.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he was going for,
yes.
right? He was saying to them, create a natural habitat for these characters so that people go into their habitat.
As opposed to
taken ourselves out of our reality and we've put ourselves inside the Jungle Book.
Yeah,
or inside,
so it's like taking
the Pirates of the Caribbean.
A 2D movie and making it a 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was, in a way, the inventor of the immersive environment.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's worked out for them.
It has worked out very nicely.
Although in the 80s, they nearly went bankrupt.
Really?
Yeah. The land, there was a sale pending and then what happened? Some movie came out and saved them.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Little Mermaid?
Something like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They had to reinvent themselves.
Well, yeah, that's what you have to do, right?
But so museum design is a form of, like,
it
if
is.
You're a curator at a museum and you're creating an exhibition,
yeah.
just like Haney just opened their railway station.
Yeah.
So that's a form of
it is.
Immersive.
Absolutely. And remember when museums used to, those things were created, but then there was a piece of glass between you and the thing. Now, not so much, right?
Okay.
Now they're creating installations and immersive environments so that you feel like you're in the 1900s.
I love those kinds of things.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing.
Wow.
But of course, they're recreating a historical time, right? They're not creating a new environment for you to experience for the first time ever. They're trying to recreate something that
which
people
is different
had
than
100 years
art.
Ago.
So they're trying to restore or recreate, which is different from creating.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sort of clearing up in my mind.
Is it? We're sorting it out. And then think of this too. Like we're moving forward all the time. technology has allowed installation artists to get insanely.
My goodness, I can't imagine where we'll go from here.
I know. Well, basically, people talk about virtual reality, mm-hmm. right? And so virtual reality is like the ultimate immersive art form mm-hmm. because you're affecting things that you wouldn't be able to affect normally in an installation.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could change your whole world. You can create people. You can eliminate people, right? Like
yes.
there's all kinds of things you can do in virtual reality.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the of installation.
Wow.
That we just haven't quite.
The internet's kind of a form of installation art.
You think so? How so?
Well, because what you search for determines what you see.
Yeah.
So when so there's all these algorithms showing you what you think you want to see.
Oh.
So my experience on the internet is much different than, like if we did the same search on something,
yeah,
we would get much different.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, trippy. Interesting. Is it because of what I searched
for
yesterday?
I feel like we should cue the music for the...
Yeah.
Do-do-do. Yeah. What was that?
Twilight Zone?
The Twilight Zone. Yeah. Welcome to the Twilight Zone. It's kind of a Twilight Zone was a bit like that too.
Yes.
Forcing
us to pull ourselves out of our reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it wasn't an immersive space.
No.
But so sometimes what's happening though is...
Ooh, a Twilight Zone 3D immersive. There you go.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
I would not go there. No. Sorry. Twilight Zone on TV freaks me out. So I couldn't go to an immersive installation of Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disney, don't do that.
No.
Please, no matter how much the bankruptcy is looming.
And you know, it's interesting you mentioned Disney. So Tomorrowland, the movie with George Clooney that was mm-hmm. filmed in...
Enderby Grinrod.
Yes, in Enderby Grinrod. Is about an installation in Disney World called Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I know. Did you see Tomorrowland? Did you go to Disneyland?
When I was little.
The Tomorrowland lineup was so long. We abandoned it.
Oh, it was cool.
Yeah.
It was like robot people and.
Oh, what a rip.
Yeah.
I think we went to Monsters.
But it's so innovative. Like there were all kinds of things in the movie that I thought, feels oddly familiar.
Oh.
And then at the end, I clued in, Tomorrowland, like as in Disney Tomorrowland. So they've gone from an immersive thing back to 2D.
Yeah. So inspiring themselves.
Yes.
They're inspiring mm-hmm. themselves.
I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. Well, and when you think about it, I mean, that's immersive mm-hmm. environmental art. It does the same thing in terms of engaging, like you're communicating philosophical ideas and you're engaging your audience in new ways and the expectations
like all art,
of,
but it's the participatory piece.
Well, yeah. And so what happens though is like, it's mm-hmm. a tumbling stone, right? You just, everything that comes out of that, because everybody has a different experience in an installation. Then the ideas and inspiration that comes out of that are different for everybody. Mm-hmm. So it can go forward. And so I'm just thinking about, here's Disney, you know, people having all these different kinds of experiences in the Tomorrowland installation at Disneyland.
Yes.
Can inspire a whole story that becomes a movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And can inspire, you know, kids to make their own jetpacks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, precisely.
I'm sure it did do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
It's a conversation.
Well, it is. And I think that it's a good conversation to have, to think about examples and whether or not it's installation art, environmental art.
Or interactive art. So art can be interactive without being installation art.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just as in case there's history buffs
out
there.
Where did it come from? It probably came from a long, long, long time ago.
Yeah. Well, art, pretty much all art has... fingers in a lot of different mm-hmm. areas, right? No matter how new or old it is. But historically, you could sort of technically throw this right back to the Renaissance, because if you recall, in the Renaissance, artists were becoming obsessed with achieving hyper-realistic
mm-hmm.
artwork.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so it was a real drive to figure it out, how to make it so realistic that people actually thought they were looking at the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of think about the Renaissance as being the beginning of that drive. But then there were a lot of artists post-Renaissance that suddenly became, you know, like aware that, wait a minute, why we need to make it so realistic? It's not important to make it realistic. And so in that way, it kind of gave birth to a lot of new forms.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we ended up in all kinds of abstract form and by the time we were in Picasso and Duchamp areas of history. So, you know, we went all the way to this like almost installation art in the Renaissance because of this hype, the drive to hyperrealism, mm-hmm. and then came and then went in a whole new direction with
all the way back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, into like really pulled apart the absolute structure of art, mm-hmm. and became more and more abstract, and communication became sort of, you know, like in a way broader, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. with abstract art, you can't, there's no one message. Right. We're not just saying, okay, this is the Madonna. She's holding the baby. She's,
yes, yes. It's, you know, beyond interpretation. It's yes. more about, it's not what it is. It's how it makes you feel. There's a big difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there was a, you know, in a way that's all brand new again. And so it's not as if we're coming back to hyperrealism. It's like we've now combined the two.
Okay.
So we're bringing the avant-garde of conceptual abstract art in with the hyper-realistic surrounding, mm-hmm. of course, because it is. It's right there. It's real. But it's also created. Yes.
Disney World is hyper-realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, a complex series of factors
it's
here.
It's very complex.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll never look at a giant teacup again the same way. Wow.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's a little bit of
hyper complex installation art.
Yeah.
Or a giant teacup.
Yeah.
So, but in a way, either way. Think about the things that thrill us, especially as kids, like a playground could be installation art.
Yes.
We call it playground, but it's actually.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Somebody designed it.
Yeah.
They designed it to be interacted with. You mm-hmm. are inside of it. Mm-hmm. You are touching. You are moving. You mm-hmm. are, right? You are having ideas.
And
there's
you are
colors.
Making
there's
the
form.
Motion happen.
Yeah.
And, yes.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Wow. Yeah. Or what else can be installation art? Playgrounds, merry-go-rounds, like the horse, the merry-go-round.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Especially because, well, if you think about some
Go
of the newer...
Go to the fair.
Yeah, like some of the newer rides and, mm-hmm. and things at the fair. I mean, not so much designed as art, like because they're not really communicating other ideas mm-hmm. except the thrill. But in a way, they're... aiming more of giving people a whole experience, mm-hmm. right? A whole
sound, emotion, mm-hmm. Fear, right? There's always a little bit of fear in there. And although the merry-go-round.
Not so much.
Not so much. I mean, but they're beautiful. I mean, talk about hyper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, and beautiful.
Yes.
Right? Like, there'd be an awesome exhibition in there, the history of merry-go-rounds.
Yes. Oof. Yes, it would be.
Ooh, if you had a huge gallery, wouldn't that be just awesome?
Have an indoor merry-go-round.
Yeah.
Like
several
the wooden ones, yeah. In Paris, they're all over. They're just in a square. There's a merry-go-round.
Okay, I'll very make sure to participate in that.
Or maybe
next
so maybe
time
that
in Paris.
Helps to explain thing. Like I'm trying to push the conversation here a bit, but like I have to say, when the London Eye first opened in London, you know, the big merry-go-round, mm-hmm. I didn't really get it. I'm like, what a dumb attraction? What, you know, what is with that? But now I sort of understand more. It is people's hunger to experience a place from more than one level, you know, in more than one way. And
And we are demanding it, right?
We are.
We want to have different kinds of experiences of the same place.
Mm-hmm. And so that there's a fine line between attraction and experience. Right?
Yes, yes.
Like for me, say, for example, Niagara Falls is mostly attraction. Mm-hmm. Not experienced. Though they have a mini one of those eyes.
Oh.
That you can go up high and see the falls from.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But like the wax museums.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, the thing is authenticity is
a
big part of making an installation
work.
Doesn't
get it right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like there's good installation and mm-hmm. there's bad installation.
And then there's just
ineffective installation.
Tacky, cheap.
Yeah. And everything has to, in order to work, has to be authentic to the space. Mm-hmm. And that's why artists work a lot with the architectural situation in mind.
Yes.
And respond to the situation, mm-hmm. respond to the space and the mm-hmm. city and the, you know, mm-hmm. because then it's authentic to the space.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, Kelowna, did you know that the Arts Council of the North Okanagan, the Central Okanagan, do every year, I think, the Mad Hatter. Have
no,
you heard
what
about
is that?
Oh, it's really cool, actually. They do a project where I think it's in partnership with the UBCO Fine Arts Department, and they find a space. Like one year they did an old motel that was about to be demolished, and they basically gave each motel room to one art student.
Wow. Yeah. That would be fun.
And so these people, all these students created an installation in each of the rooms. So then you as a participant got to go into each of these installations and experience them. And there was just everything, everything.
Oh man, that would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty intense. So I think they do it every year. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, just like go on their website.
I don't like the name though. It sort of implies that you have to be slightly mad to...
Yeah, I don't know what that's
I disagree.
All about. But anyway, they have a tea party at the beginning. Oh, that's their opening. So maybe it was just the theme of the first year and then it just stuck, right?
All right.
Yeah. But anyway,
I can live with that.
Yeah. So I mean, there's an example right here in the Okanagan you can go see. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
And then I think the authenticity piece is so critical too, right? Cuz I always say I don't think I'd ever go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Cuz it's too fake.
Yeah.
I hate that. I hate fake.
I know, like fake Venice and fake Paris and fake Greece.
And yet people are drawn to that.
I know. Maybe it's the playground aspect, right?
Maybe it's a grown-up Disney World. I do love Disney World, though. Yeah. I always have.
Well, I didn't think I'd like Disneyland, mm-hmm. right? Like, I thought that would be the ultimate commercialism mm-hmm. and merchandising and, you know, and then
but they're
I
so clever.
I know. And it was so fabulous. Yes. Like I really enjoyed it. Yeah. And I think because I guess it was like a theater production. The entire day was a theater production. I'm inside a theater production.
Yes.
I'm just going from stage to stage to stage really mm-hmm. is all
That's
I'm doing.
True.
And everybody that we came into contact with was an actor or mm-hmm. an actress and they just played the part of this awesome experience.
Yes.
And so I had an awesome experience.
Yes.
I mean, I guess they did their job mm-hmm. because it was really fun. And mm-hmm. I saw the art. I saw, do you know what I mean? Like I saw the art form in everything they do.
Yes.
And I saw them valuing their designers and their artists and their creatives. And I love that they did that.
Yes.
And it's, you know, that was an immersive experience
yes,
all by itself.
Totally.
You know, never mind going on the rides, right? Mm-hmm. Indiana Jones, that was pretty amazing.
Was it?
But it's kind of beyond that mm-hmm. just because I see that they use their creatives in a real way, authentic to their idea,
and
right?
So
the whole Disney
They created
idea.
A world. They didn't recreate a world.
Yes.
I think maybe that's the piece for me. If you create a world, no problem. If you recreate, then I get a little bit like,
Yeah.
Fake Venice. Fake gondola. Fake. Don't like it.
Yeah, the fake thing never comes away,
no.
right? It's there. It's in there.
Mm.
And it smells bad.
It smells bad. It doesn't pass the sniff test.
Yeah, so anyway, another couple of examples. We
yeah,
had
but there's
awesome
other, there's, you know, some much more sophisticated,
oh yeah, for
meaningful,
sure.
deep experiences than Disney World.
Yeah,
but it was just to,
I want to point out that the
understand.
Gallery had a really amazing installation a few years back. I think it was 2005, Tiki Mulvihill.
Yes, I remember.
Hat Key Island.
Oh, she created an imaginary island.
Yeah.
Yeah. With
and
like a boat and
Yeah. You had to get to it with a little boat. You had to pull yourself across the ocean on the boat. And the whole thing was built. It was a built installation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wooden plank pathway. And she was the tour guide. She took you through. You got like when she wasn't there, you just walked the plank and you read the history and you saw the, you know, all the artifacts. But essentially it was about a extinct island where it's a fishing village that died out because the fish disappeared.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and so there was a story, there was a narrative.
Yes. Wow.
And the narrative was either she could be the tour guide
yes.
and she was there and gave you the tour, you know, as though, you know, she's giving you a historical documentation
yeah,
of these
once
people's
upon
lives.
A time. Yeah,
yeah, which was quite beautiful. Or else you just build your own narrative, right, as
mm-hmm.
you experience the whole piece. And that was so fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And Tiki just traveled through Salmon Arm one day, came into the gallery, saw our space. And, you know, we're not a Class A gallery. I might have mentioned this before, but because we have
windows. Well, let's talk
windows,
about there's different classes of galleries.
Yeah. Well, there's... Yeah, we're only one step above an outdoor gallery,
okay.
basically, because we have windows that let natural light in, and we also have doors that open to the outside.
Okay.
Whereas a Class A gallery would have doors, like inside doors, so that you have a separate set of doors, then you have a space, and then you have doors to go
okay.
to the outside.
Right.
And you have no natural light.
Okay.
All your light is purposeful and not...
Well, not where you're... You have no natural light for pieces that don't... Like the National Gallery has lots of natural light, but there's also lots of.
Yeah, but it's controlled.
The collection is.
You have, yeah, but you'd have controls on your natural light. Like there's screens that you can put up
yeah.
that will block the natural light, block the things that are damaging about natural light. Like Kamloops Art Gallery has, because they have the big windows.
Big windows, but it's controlled.
Yes.
Yes.
So anyway, what was my point? Oh, yeah. So she came to the gallery. She saw our beautiful windows. She saw all the natural light flooding in and said, that is my kind of space for my kind of installation. Because for her, it worked, right? She had so many natural materials. She had grasses and the wood and driftwood and, right? Like it worked because it felt like outside. Except it was inside and protected.
It felt like outside, but it was inside.
Yeah. So that's why she proposed her exhibition there. And it was the, I think it was the first kind like that. I mean, we'd had other small installation pieces before that. And we certainly have had small ones since, but that was the first encompassing one up until now.
It was something. Oh, and now, well.
Yeah. Now it's big.
Well, it's very big.
Yeah. So, anyway, the, what else do I want to say about that?
The different types of galleries.
Yeah, but I just about.
Class A, Class
Yeah, I don't know if we're class Z or something. Oh, right. I don't know, whatever we are. But whatever it is, all it is we only can have certain kinds of artwork in our gallery. We can't have, for instance, when people say, oh, I just saw an exhibition that was on tour from the National Gallery of the, you know, of Da Vinci's such and such, right? Like, we can't do that because we have no protection, no light protection for that. We have no climate control. We have, you know, we're just limited
that way.
That's true.
There's some things we can't do.
Yeah. But fortunately, we do have the ability to build a room within the gallery.
Well, we know that now.
We certainly do. That was a monstrous event, which we'll actually talk about after the break. But before that, we'll just, I just wanted to kind of talk briefly about sort of how installations are different as, again, from a regular exhibition, a traditional exhibition. So, and this is something that Janet actually brought up in one of her interviews a while back, but I know in our gallery, this is exactly what we have to deal with. People view a piece for anywhere between 2 and 10 seconds, and then they move on.
Any piece?
Usually, yeah, like all the pieces that are on a wall, right? A 2D piece. 2 to 10 seconds, and then they've moved on. So we've got... Poor Louise, having a little coughing issue. So we've got a problem with developing a relationship with a piece of artwork. And an interactive piece, an installation piece, is much more successful at creating a longer-term relationship and intimacy, in fact. So that's another difference.
The amount of time you spend with
them. Yeah. So you can walk around our gallery and you can see 20 pieces inside of 3 minutes if you're, you know, I mean, if it doesn't grab you and hold you.
Yeah, you sort of power.
Yeah.
Whereas, I've done that.
Yeah. Whereas with Janet's pieces, her walks and, you know, other kinds of interactive pieces, she's got you, right?
It's like stop and stay a while.
Yeah. She's got you for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And so you develop this intimacy that's unlike any other form of art.
How interesting.
Yeah. Right now, we're going to talk about...
It occurs to me that everybody's life is a work of installation art.
Oh, see, you're getting into that philosophical space where your mind is getting blown.
Like, well, yeah, like your homes and where you put your stuff and how you interact with the things, you know, like.
Well, it's true. And you're giving, in a way, you're creating an installation in your home that give other people an experience of Louise.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I know.
Dun, dun, dun. Ooh, that should be a dramatic moment.
Okay, so let's talk about this installation.
Yes. So, but this, these guys are particularly, I bet you their house is pretty fun based on these two pieces. But yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of information on Janet and George online.
Yes.
And they have 20 odd books written about them. We have some of those books at the gallery, but if you want to learn more about Janet and George, just Google them.
And their body of work is astounding.
It is.
There are so many pieces.
Yeah. So we've got a long history. They've been doing installation work for 20 odd years and they've been working together. They've been collaborating. They've done solo works, each of them. They've got this just beautiful selection of works that you can see online. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the big piece that we have, Experiment in F Sharp Minor, is a 2013 work. So when I first started working on having this exhibition, and probably all of our listeners, all 8 of you, know the story about why I know Janet, because she was one of my profs at University of Lethbridge, and she was just in the beginning parts of her career in sound installation work. So she'd actually taken our class at one point to see an exhibition of hers and in Calgary, and then we saw one at SAG, the Southern Alberta Art Gallery of hers. When I discovered her living in Grindrod, I started talking to the two of them about having an exhibition in our gallery. But of course, at that point, they were already really superstars. They had represented Canada at the Venice Biennale in 2001 with the piece Paradise Institute. And so they're pretty, like you'd say, world famous by that time.
Or well on their way.
So it wasn't necessarily easy to convince them to show at Sam and Arm Art Gallery. But what was interesting is I loved Opera for a Small Room so much, I was aiming to get that. I thought at some point that piece is going to become available and we just want one piece, right? We just look at little old us. And our beautiful musical town would love to have this piece.
So fitting.
Yeah. So we kind of talked and talked and
We'll think about it. Well, they didn't say no right away. So.
They didn't say no. And I think Janet was very interested. It was just really a logistics thing. They had a staff at that point. They had obligations. She gets commissions for sound walks all the time, like, or the audio walks. So I think that it might have been just a logistics thing, right? How do we make this happen? So a lot of the times their works go on tour together. Like a body of six or a body of nine or whatever, go someplace big, you know, Copenhagen or Sao Paulo or whatever. So at one point we kind of had secured, and it was Zev really who did a lot of this, had secured Opera. And then of course Opera became not available, but they had just completed Experiment in F sharp minor and said, you know what, we could do this. And that was like, well, it's musical, it's interactive, it's perfect.
It's perfect.
Works for
us. It really is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's only shown...
Well, this is just fifth time.
Fifth time in the world.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty
good. We're number five.
Yeah.
Again, we're number five.
It's not bad.
It's really good.
So the process of doing this was big. We had to have Linda Franklin design the room. We had to have Ian McDermott working on this for like the last 6 months, trying to make sure that we had all the supplies lined up, because we had to build a room for this piece in 2 days.
Yes.
Because it needed 3 days for installation. So that was a really big thing.
And there needed to be no light, no natural
light. No light. No sound leakage.
No light, no sound leakage.
Yeah. And it had specific...
If you think about the gallery and you think about that requirement...
Yeah. There's our Class A status all of a sudden in one tiny space.
We built a Class A gallery in a Class C space.
So
we are awesome.
Yeah.
So and in by 5 days... And by we, I mean you and Eric and everyone who did the work.
Guess. Well, there was like 20-odd people involved in this, right? Like Ian had a team of 4 or 5 guys that just came in. They worked like clockwork. Just bing, 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 bing. We had that room built in about 20 hours.
20 hours.
Yep. And then
Two and a half days.
Someone was into paint. Someone was into light carpet. Someone was in, like, you know, then the technical team showed up.
Carpeting, and, painting.
Yep.
The doors. Doors.
And then the wiring had to start and the floor was built and then the wiring had to start and then the carpet had to go on, right? Like the pieces had to come in bits at a time while the wiring was being done and the lights being installed. And
typically they get a month to install.
Yeah, they usually get at least 2 weeks, often 3 weeks. 3 weeks is usually the sort of turnaround time.
In the bigger galleries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I just heard this randomly from a certain person that an exhibition in Europe right now that's having 6 of their pieces had a $500,000 budget to set their gallery up for the 6 pieces. So when you think about it, we have a third of that exhibition and we did not have a third of a $500,000 budget. So we did this on the good graces of a lot of passionate people.
Yes.
But also
it's amazing how passion will keep you frugal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also we did get some funding, right? She Swept Tourism was great.
Yes.
We got small grants from the Hamber Foundation and the Kerner Foundation, which were so helpful. And
the ongoing funding from the BC Arts Council.
Yes.
And
City
Fee for Service agreement with the city. There's so many.
And we have all of our buy a day at the gallery.
Yes.
People who bought days during the summer. So we do have the support of a lot of different sources.
And you know, in terms of the investment into the community, I would say the artists have been very generous with the loan.
Yes.
Right. And it wouldn't always have gone this way.
Yeah.
Like, no one else is going to get the favor that we got, I guess.
I think you might be right about that. I think that
maybe.
I think we're special.
Yes.
And I think Zev Tiefenbach worked very hard to make it so that it was as least expensive as possible. And even in the technical world, I think in the last year or so, they've simplified the piece down so that it is only a tech team of two that has to set it up. And he was one of them so that we could save that. And because he's local, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to pay his expenses on flying here.
Exactly.
Yeah, there was lots of things that made it very manageable for us.
And the gallery has been setting money aside for this show for
three years
so that we would be ready.
Yep.
And the other thing, and this is an important piece too, is it's open to the public by donation.
Yeah.
So typically a show like this, whether it's the National Gallery or the Vancouver Art Gallery or the Ontario Art Gallery or the Art Gallery of Ontario, there would be an exhibition fee.
Yep. Yeah, you'd be paying 10 or 12 or 20 bucks to go in.
Yes.
And see.
And so we as a team, you know, and out of respect for the artists too, wanted to open it up to the community as wide as, you know, as wide as we could.
Yeah.
So that everybody has a chance to see the caliber of art that's built in this community.
Yeah.
And furthermore, a lot of the recordings are of local musicians. So the only way this works is if you go to the show and then you take a few postcards and you say to your friends, you have to go to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what this is all
about. One of the local musicians is your neighbor.
Yes.
Yeah. Rhiannon Schmidt. That's a gift because when you think of it, all of these local musicians are now being featured all over the world in this piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every big gallery they go into. So, yeah, it's a nice little shoe swap flavor.
We've been given a beautiful gift.
We have been. So we all need to take advantage by seeing it and telling people about it.
And sharing it, you know, pass it on, pay it forward, whatever you want to. But there are people in your life who love music. I mean, just say the word speaker, amps, woofers, wire. I mean, they got half the population right there.
right? And oh my gosh, the musicians. So far, I hope Brian PJ doesn't mind me talking about him, but yesterday, right at the end of the day, he came in and so I took him in to experiment and start my... You should have seen him because, you know, he is one of those multidisciplinary musicians.
Yes.
He knows how to play 19 instruments or something. And so he figured it out very quickly, right? Like, because you can isolate all the different sounds, the different tracks. And so he was jumping around. He would kind of start in one corner and make something happen, move a little bit slightly, and then all of a sudden he'd run around the other side of the table and make this other thing happen because he recognized which things were going to work together and make a unique sound.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really interesting to watch him.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of other, in fact, there was a lady in on our first open day who was playing, like, you know, making everything work. And then all of a sudden she started to sing in F sharp minor.
Yeah.
She said, everything is in F sharp minor. And then la, la, la. And she started to sing, like, to make it, to sort of harmonize. And I was like, you need to just stay here.
Wow.
Like, that was amazing.
Maybe so they could wire up to a sense.
So, you know, here's
and
something.
And kids love it too.
Oh, yeah, kids really do love it. But what was interesting is you brought your lovely little group of kids in.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're all in there together, they're all like kind of madly running around and doing their interpretive dance.
Trying to impress each other. Yeah.
But then after they'd been there out and they'd seen the other piece and then looking at books or whatever, then they wanted to come in one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting because it's a whole different experience when you're by yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. So I encourage everyone to try it at least those two times with your friends and by yourself.
By yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah. And here's something. There's a couple of things I really wanted to say. First of all, very few symphonies in the whole history of music have been written in F sharp minor.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really unusual. So it's kind of, I'd like to know more about why they chose F sharp minor. I think it's a common chord in eerie movies.
Yes.
Right? So it's that sense of unease.
Probably, there's a message there for sure.
But just as an example, like Rachmaninoff is one of the composers that has a few in that key. I think Haydn has one or two, and Mozart has one.
One.
And that's it. Like, that's, I mean, it's very rare. So it's kind of interesting that. And then the other thing I wanted to say, George has this great quote that I thought really is applying nicely to this show.
Yes.
In one of his interviews, he said, I always hope that every work has that magical moment where the viewer questions what just happened or loses touch with themselves or reality. And in a funny way, this usually makes them more aware afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really appropriate to this piece because your awareness of your soundscape is something that today, especially, you know, is kind of blurred, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we have to block out so much in order to be able to hear each other talk.
And it's not like you can't close your ears. You know, you can close your eyes, you can plug your nose, but you cannot close your ears.
Yeah.
I mean, you can put earplugs in, but it's not the same thing, right? There's no mechanism to.
Yeah.
And to me, that probably, or you can't not feel something.
Yeah.
Right? So auditory and tactical,
yeah,
must be the most important.
Well, they're the kinds that we have, in a way, the least control over.
Yes. Yeah. From a physiological perspective, you know, mm-hmm. evolutionary perspective, they must be the two most important.
Oh, interesting. Because we can't.
Because you can live without smelling and you can live, you know, without talking and you can live without seeing. And you can live without hearing. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It just seems to me that because there's not that default switch off,
yeah,
you always need to be listening, right?
For sure. Mm-hmm. I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's a whole other aspect about the auditory work, about artists' work that's all about sound.
And so it is the sound piece is so important.
It is.
The art is the sound.
Yeah.
So people come in going, well, where's the art?
Yeah.
You gotta go listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what I've told people to help them kind of understand this too is mm-hmm. that if you can imagine a space between visual art and music,
mm-hmm.
this space. Is it. Because you're having a sensory experience, mm-hmm. just like you are with mm-hmm. music, but you're also participating,
auditory.
You're creating,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you're curating it. Mm-hmm. But you know the artist is still in control of all the sounds that mm-hmm. are happening, but you're the one that's manipulating it and making it its thing mm-hmm. and having an experience.
So it's all five levels.
Yeah, but it's also very beautiful to look at.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
It is stunning. So mm-hmm. anyway, and now.
The art world turns. A dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, I've missed that. It's been 2 weeks.
I know. Had a week off there. Canada Day.
That's right.
Busy enjoying ourselves, working hard for our community.
Yes.
But, So it's kind of exciting.
We're back to the dramatic moment. Well, there's just been a lot of drama though.
Well, I know. And that's the thing about missing a week is a lot of dramatic moments lined up for us, right?
Yes.
But here's one.
Well, this is one. So in Toronto, they're getting ready for the opening of the Pan Am Games, mm-hmm. the largest sporting event ever.
Yeah, bigger
Canada.
Than the Olympics. Like it has more athletes than the Vancouver Olympics.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know the Winter Olympics are usually smaller than Summer Olympics, but we've had the Summer Olympics too. So, anyway, biggest ever.
Wow, that's big.
So everyone in Toronto is quite worried about traffic. But anyway, they should always be worried about traffic in Toronto. But on the Bloor Street Viaduct, years ago was built. They call it a suicide barrier. So, you know, hundreds of people have died jumping off the Bloor Street viaduct. So an architect and designer by the name of, oh my goodness, I've lost his name. It'll come back. Was commissioned to come up with a solution. And so they built this rods of steel that went over the bridge, but he always thought of it as an art piece, not really a functional, like it was functional, but it had to also be beautiful and mm-hmm. send a message. And he was interviewed on CBC, and it's a very inspiring story about taking the loss of these lives and turning it into a beautiful work of art. So part of the plan was to light it up, and that it would be lit based on air temperature and wind, and it would change so that it becomes sort of this horrible gray construct, you know, ugly thing into this beautiful, lively piece of art. So because the city's getting ready for the Pan Am Games, they finally put the money in to do the lighting part.
Oh.
And it was lit this week.
Wow.
And it really is stunning.
Wow.
I've seen it on YouTube, and it's been covered on CBC. Change World, of course, but
so how long?
It's just so inspiring that, you know, that it actually got to...
Yeah, well, how long had it been in existence before the money was spent on lighting it up? Like, how many years ago?
Let's see.
Like 10 years?
Yeah, it's called the Luminous Veil. Did I mention that? Finally built in 2003. There was only enough money for the basic structure.
Yeah.
No lights were included. It wasn't until 10 years later that council, looking for ways to spruce up the city ahead of this summer game, finally decided to add another $2.8 million to the Bloor Street famous bridge.
Wow.
So,
Well, it is, yeah, it is a lovely video to watch happen. And it is kind of interesting to see colors change according to wind and temperature.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it reminds us that everything is constantly changing always.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Nothing ever stays.
But you know what? That same. It really, just last night I was listening to The Current and the part that they have called By Design.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just talking about solution-based design
yes.
in cities and yeah. public spaces. And it was very interesting because, you know, we always talk about public spaces and creating gathering spaces and creating interest in things that are authentic to our community. But I didn't really think about what this one guy brought up. And this whole suicide barrier idea kind of falls into this category.
It certainly does.
Yeah. And that is defensive design.
Mm-hmm. So designing to prevent things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of design now, even though like there's still public spaces, they're mm-hmm. still given money to mm-hmm. do public spaces. The things in the public space, like the seating, chair or stair rails or whatever, all of those things are being designed to prevent things from happening. So benches are designed to prevent people from sleeping on them. Stair rails designed to prevent skateboarders from scooting down mm-hmm. them.
And in Quebec, there was a particularly nasty one in Montreal where it was a covered area had metal spikes put on the bottom so people wouldn't lie.
Ugh.
It's yeah. so mean.
It is mean.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of, you know, it just really made me think about that. Like the whole anti-homeless movement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anti-homeless would mean providing housing mm-hmm. for people.
I know. Designers should never use their power for evil.
Yeah.
Only used for good. But
yeah. So instead.
But it is. Yeah, absolutely. This is why airports are so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure they engage in defensive design. Don't sit here too long.
Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable.
Well, another anti, yeah, no kidding, an anti-loitering design
yes.
is benches that tilt slightly forward.
Huh.
So you can't really sit there for very long. You slide off. You can't get comfortable because you have to hold yourself up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it kind of is starting to feel a bit creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're not allowed to stay too long and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole concept of homelessness being a problem,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, the solution would be to design comfortable places and places they want to go to be, to hang out, to sleep and be comfortable.
Would design a welcoming and a community that has solutions.
Yeah. That make people happy, not that
as
make people uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not a solution, making people uncomfortable.
No. They're uncomfortable already.
Yeah. We're looking for ways to be more comfortable, ways
exactly.
to connect again. And, mm-hmm. and yeah. So,
So it's user-driven design too is the other thing. Like some large institutions now will not put any walkways outside. They just let people walk and then they see where the user's natural.
Right.
Path is because you know like you'll see a sidewalk and so clever, put a sidewalk here and a path here, and then right like 2 meters away there's kind of someone's beaten down the path and that's the way people want to go. So I think it was a school in Australia. The landscaping plan, they basically let the users decide.
Nice. Okay, I'm sorry to say this because now you're a counselor and now, mm-hmm. but the city of Salmon Arm has to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this because there's two situations. There's at Marine Park when we're doing WOW,
mm-hmm.
we can't get around that flower bed that's along the sidewalk on the south side without walking all the way to the other end.
Yeah.
And so people are leaping over, but it's a little bit too wide to leap over without stomping on a flower.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a pathway halfway down that
halfway
flower
down
bed.
That, yeah.
And then the other one is at McGuire Lake when you're coming out again on the on the south side to go to the sidewalk that runs in front of like Shoe Swap Chefs. You can see a little beaten track right through the flower bed there. And they're making it so beautiful and there's beautiful flowers, but there's still the people.
Oh, sure.
Their little footprints going right through the middle.
We know where we want to go. And
just make a path.
Because those are the kids going down to.
Yeah, like going to school.
User, totally user focused.
Yes.
They're going from school
yep.
to Tim Hortons, A&W,
yep.
Wendy's, what have you.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's kind of,
And that's what design is. You have to look at it from the bigger perspective.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And sometimes you have to sit back and let your citizens help you with that. Anyway, okay, so let's talk about the show. Now, we're excited because we're in the week before the opening. even though we're actually open.
We're open, but it's the preview week.
It's preview week. So we're open Tuesday to Saturday, 11 till 5. Yes. Here's our extended hour every day till 5
So we're
o'clock.
Normally only open till 4.
Right.
But now we're open till 5, so people can come after work.
Yeah. Or at least get
You don't have to pack a bag. Or it's not a big deal. No. It's a big deal, but it's easy to do.
Yeah,
I guess
it's very easy. And like you said, we're still admission by donation. I think we put up a sign that we ask for a consideration of a $5 donation, just because
that's totally fair.
You know, we just need to boost revenue a little bit, but we still want it to be accessible to everybody. So we're still happy to accept your toonie or
whatever. Admission by donation says this is open to the public, but it was not free.
Yes.
That's what...
Yeah. There we go. Maybe we should just say that on our sign.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, but this Saturday is the official opening gala.
Yes.
And that is because both artists are going to be here. So we're excited about that.
Yeah.
Whereas like last weekend, if we'd had the opening last weekend, we would have been missing George because he was busy at the National Gallery of London setting up their other piece there.
Yes. So. Which is getting rave reviews on Twitter.
Yeah. You mentioned that.
Yes.
So... not only do we have the opening gala on Saturday, July 11th, 7 o'clock, that is open. Everyone's welcome. We also have an artist talk scheduled for the next day, Sunday, July 12th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Salmar Classic Theater. So we've got a bit more space for more bodies
to
come.
So you can sit and listen to them.
Yeah. And so they'll have a bit of a presentation, and Enderby Arts Council is working with us on this one because Enderby's been looking for an opportunity.
We share them with Grinoir.
We kind of share. Yeah. We share them.
We share
with them. We can share. Yes. And they've been wonderful. Karen Rohat's down at Enderby Arts Council has been wonderful in helping us promote. She's posted all of Enderby. And so we're working with them to do the artist talk and can get everybody who's ever wanted to hear Janet and George speak and see, you know, for themselves what kind of stuff they've been up to. This is their chance.
Can they ask questions?
I think so.
Oh my goodness.
I think it's very interactive.
I'm a little starstruck, though. I know.
It was so funny when Janet came in on Saturday, the first open day. Like when I first saw her, because we had people like coming and going and coming and going, and she was in the sound corridor, so it's kind of dark in there, right? So I saw her and I just about said, "Oh, it's this way. Come in. Oh, hi."
Step this way.
Yeah, she's really quite wonderful and very easy to talk to. Aww. There's really no, I mean, I guess when you first see her, you're like, but they're wonderful people.
Yes.
They're very thoughtful. And I mean, just like a lot of artists.
Well, of course, you'd have to be to produce works of this caliber.
Yeah. And intimate works. So of course they're, you know, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not like this with everybody, but I think that when people produce work that's very personal and very intimate and create these beautiful spaces and things that really share, right? Really open themselves up. They have to come from a place of openness and generosity.
So, again, the intention, the product matches the intention.
Yeah.
So it has to come from a person of capable of deep. Right?
Yeah.
Relationships.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, that's when people meet super celebrities and then say, he was like a real guy.
He was like a real guy.
Well, they are real people.
They actually are real people.
Yeah.
I know. We forget that, right? We want to celebrify them.
But yeah. But important. As true Canadians, we tend not to. So that's okay too,
I know.
Right?
That's good.
Yeah.
That's
good. It is good. So everyone's welcome. The artist talk is admission by donation on Sunday too. So yeah, Toonie will get you in there too. And yeah. We have a lot of things coming up this week. You are now going to be off for a few weeks. So next week.
That's right.
I'm going
to the Beaverbrook in New Brunswick.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I know. That's a pretty amazing thing. I have Jackie Mativia coming next week
for theater
as my guest
edge.
Because of the Theater on the Edge
that's
Festival.
Exciting.
Yeah, which is coming up
in
July.
And then we'll be back. After that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the meantime, please come to the show. It's a gift. And we're all very grateful for it.
And we are. And you can find more information on upcoming arts events on our website, salmonarmartcenter.ca. And on the participate page, you can click on that. You can find our new Aboriginal artist directory on our website as well. It says new and then find, and you can do a search option of media, which is very exciting. You could follow us on Facebook, Salmon Arm Art Center, and get little tidbits and insider scoops on things like the exhibition and wow.
Yeah, and share
like
them.
That.
If you see something you like, share it.
Yeah, that's and of course,
it's
Wednesday.
All installation art is about.
It is. Yeah. And then Wednesday on the Wharf also has its own Facebook page, and you can also follow it on Twitter at Wow Concerts.
Yeah.
Great. Have an excellent holiday,
yes,
Louise.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon.
And we'll see you soon.